Good evening, and welcome to a special edition of The Forum. On June 4, 2016, Lima Bowie was in Independence, Missouri, to receive the 2016 Community of Christ International Peace Award. Miss Bowie is the 2011 Peace Laureate and Liberian Peace Activist, who organized Christian and Muslim women in prayer and public protests, which played a pivotal role in ending Liberia's civil war in 2003. Bowie was featured in the 2008 documentary, Pray the Devil Back to Hell. Her memoir, Mighty Be Our Powers, How Sisterhood, Prayer, and Sex Changed a Nation at War, describes how her call to peace was solidified by asking the question, why were women who bore the brunt of war expected to remain quiet while men debated how to make peace? And now, KKFI is proud to present this magical night in June with 2011 Nobel Peace Laureate Lima Bowie. Enjoy.
I'd like to introduce now the Executive Director for the Peace Pavilion and for Peace Pathways, Barb Harmon, for a presentation.
This peace weaving was created by children and guests who visit the pavilion. The weaving reflects the unique contribution of each individual while honoring unity in diversity in the pursuit of peace. It is our pleasure to present this gift to Lima on behalf of the Peace Pavilion.
Good evening. Today is a very important day, a day we have been waiting for quite a long time, in which we will be presenting the award to our sister, Lima Bowie. Allow me to give some short biography information of our sister, Lima Bowie. She is a trained social worker and a woman's rights advocate. She is the founder and president of Bowie Peace Foundation Africa, which provides educational and leadership opportunities to girls, women, and youth in West Africa. Among her many accomplishments, she is the 2001 Nobel Peace Laureate for her leadership of women of the Women of Liberia Mass Action for Peace. This nonviolent movement joined Christian and Muslim women, empowering them to speak against the war and join in prayer and public protest. Their actions played a pivotal role in ending the civil war in Liberia in 2003. Sister Lima was the founding head of the Liberian Reconciliation Initiative and was the co-founder and former executive director of Women, Peace, and Security Network Africa. She is also a founding member and former Liberian coordinator of Women in Peace Building Network in West Africa Network for Peace Building. Sister Lima travels internationally to advocate for human rights, peace, and security. Her story is shared in her memoir, Mighty Be Our Powers, how sisterhood, prayer, and sex changed a nation at war. And in the award-winning documentary, Pray the Devil Back to Hell. On behalf of Community of Christ, I'm very happy to give this short biography of my sister, Lema Boy. Thank you.
Tonight, Lema Boy joins a highly distinguished group of internationally recognized peacemakers who have received the International Peace Award in recognition of their significant contributions to peacemaking vision, advocacy, and action. I would like to invite Lema to join me now beside the International Peace Award sculpture. We are especially pleased that you are willing to accept the International Peace Award. While no award can adequately acknowledge the power of your vision and the depth of the efforts, even sacrifices, you have made for peace in our world, we hope that somehow what we're doing this evening is a blessing and an encouragement to you as you continue your work. Each recipient of the International Peace Award is given a beautiful bronze peace sculpture mounted on a solid wood base. There's a little story behind this sculpture that I'd like to share with you. Gail Sundell, the Wyoming artist and church member who created the sculpture, recounts, "I thought of the idea of God handing the earth to us, and I needed a model of hands, so she asked her husband Tom and her son to be the models." And I quote from her, "I wanted the larger hand placing the earth in the smaller hand. When I was through with the sketch, I realized that what I really wanted to say with the sculpture was that we adults are handing the world to our children." I also want to share with the gathered congregation and you that this beautiful sculpture is accompanied by also a monetary award. This award is given to you to be used to support whatever cause or organization you so choose. We understand it will be given to the Bowie Peace Foundation, Africa, USA. And we are very pleased with your choice. We will now beg the indulgence of the assembly as we are directed by our photographers who need to take the necessary photos. And then we'll invite you wherever you would like to speak to share your address.
Thank you.
There's one over here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is another day, another great day that the Lord has made, and I will rejoice and be glad in it. To the community of Christ family, I want to say a big thank you. I'm humbled by this award, and I would like to dedicate this award to the young people of our world, the ones who have no idea of where our world is headed, but they're optimistic that they too can create a better world for themselves. I would like to dedicate it to young people who are victims and survivors of the carnage that our world is seeing on a daily basis. And I want to say thank you. This award holds a special place in my heart. I know the journalist from Missouri sent a series of questions, and one of it was, which of your awards is more like in terms of rank? For me, they're all linked, not ranked, because it's an indication that I'm still doing God's work. He sees what I'm doing, and he's happy with the little that I'm contributing to the world. I often tell people that every award that I've received in my life comes at a moment when I'm questioning the authenticity of my work, or I'm at a place where I'm about to give up, or I have hit some brick wall, and then I get a call that we want to give you this. And then I fall on my knees and say, Jesus, you're truly Lord. And it is those mornings that if any of you decided to call Jesus, if you don't get him, Lema has him all to herself. We live today, our world that we find ourselves living in is a world that sometimes I believe when God looks around, he wonders, what happened to my creation? Where are we headed? What has our world become? You turn on the TV, carnage. You put on the radio, bloodbath. You read for 30 minutes on the internet, more violence. If you sit down on a daily basis to track the level of death and destruction that happens in our world, you will be depressed, frustrated, and you lose hope. In my work, I travel to many places. My husband and I, he's in the audience today, just came back from Austria through Germany, Chicago, and then here. If I start babbling, it's because I'm jet lagged. But on the journeys that I take, I meet people that sometimes it breaks my heart as a mother, as an activist, the levels of suffering that people have to go through. Yesterday, whilst we were in Austria, a group of Austrians had started a school for refugees. And they came to me and said, we want you to come because you inspire us to start this school. 2 years ago when you came, you challenged us not just to accept refugees, but to open up our hearts and give support to them. And we started by finding a home for a Syrian family. And today we have two schools teaching young refugees and migrants different skills that are needed in Austria. So excitedly, they wanted me to meet some of their students. I went out, we did the picture, the media was there. I said what I had to say, thanking them. And one of the little boys raised his hand and said, I want to ask a question. He says, I'm 17. I've been in this country for 7 months. And I came by myself. These Austrians are nice. I'm going to school. I have a place to stay.
But how do I stop crying? How do I stop the pain that I feel? How do I be happy? Even though they're providing everything for me, how? And like every 17-year-old you know, he was trying to be strong because we were in front of cameras. So he was fighting back the tears. I want to stay. I want to be strong, but I feel so alone. And I turned around, there were about four others, and they all had tears in their eyes and nodding their heads because their stories were the same. And this little boy said, sometimes I walk in the street and some people are not very nice. They tell us we're liars and we're in their countries because we want money from their government. I turned to him and said, you know something? The beauty of this conversation is that I too was 17 when I was a refugee. I too was lost and angry and depressed and hurt and confused. But God brought you here for a purpose. Because I made good of all of the opportunities that were provided to me in the midst of some mistakes. And today I stand where I stand. You hear negative things, block them out. The positive ones, hold on to, because you have been choosing to be here, be somebody, so that you can go out tomorrow. And then the tears walls just broke, and we all started crying because he couldn't hold it, I couldn't hold it, the rest of the people, and we were just a mess. But this is my life. These are the things that I see. From DR Congo to Libya to working with women in South Sudan to hiding out in Italy to work with Syrian activists to hiding out in different places to work with people who are on the front line for peace. The stories you hear in the communities with young children, it leaves you wondering, what happened to the perfect creation that our God made? What happened to our world from January to May of 2016? There have been 558 terrorist attacks worldwide. In March, on a single day, 300 people were beheaded on a single day. In some places, 60 persons are killed in a day. The least number of deaths in all of these 558 attacks was 3 persons. That's too many lives lost. When the Syrian crisis started in 2012, there were 2 parties. The government and the protesters. Today, there are 108 armed groups operating within Syria. Let's take a walk down to Africa. South Sudan, Africa's newest republic. In 2013, when their war started, there were 2 parties. Today, 26 armed groups operating in that country. The former president of Nigeria, Obasanjo, and his committee who did their inquiry about the carnage that happened in South Sudan came out with some very damning conclusions that the leaders of that country were not fit to lead a pack of dogs. Children as young as 6 were raped. In that same country, a girl, the value of a cow is more than a girl. In some parts of Asia where I've been, where children are sold off, they tell you girls are liability and their cattle are access. You ask yourself, so where are we headed? What is peace? And some people will say peace is the absence of war. Okay, well and good. So then it means the U.S. is in a state of peace, right? There is no overt conflict happening here, but yesterday was the Orange Day around the US, a day celebrating or a day creating awareness against gun violence in this country. I remember once upon a time someone saying to me, "Do you want to live here?" I said, "Hell no." "So why don't you want to live here?" I said, "In my country, I know which side the rebels are coming from. In this country, you don't know when war will erupt on the streets. The violence that you read about and hear about, sometimes I hold my head and I ask myself, is this a civilized nation? Go to other parts of the world where they tell you, oh, we are at peace. The divisions that have been created between people on the basis of the colors of their skin and the way they dress. Not only do I have the privilege and the blessing of being in communities that have war, I also have the privilege and the blessing to visit nations that are quote unquote in peace. And most times dressed like this, you experience firsthand the racism and the discrimination. And sometimes it's so sickening, you ask yourself, what world is this that we live in? A few months back, I found myself in one Asian, Middle Eastern country, and I was so tired, barely dragging my suitcase, trying to find the next business class lounge just to get 30 minutes of sleep before I jet off to somewhere. I saw something that I pray I never see in my life again. A group of Americans were walking, and this one man walked to these people and spat in the face of one of the women. The sleep left my eye. I stood there with my mouth open. What kind of world is this? What kind of world are we leaving our children? What kind of world do we want to give them? What kind of peace are we talking about? Okay, so if peace is not just wars, if peace is not just the absence of violence, then we say peace is democracy, right? Peace is when we're able to go to the polls and elect leaders, like you have a situation going on in the U.S. now, where you're about to elect your newest president, whoever that person will be. And people measure peace on the basis of democracy. We are a democratic country, we are in peace, and we're doing peaceful things. But in many parts of the world that I've been, people go to elections and elect someone that they believe in, and these people change the constitution to suit themselves. Instead of building schools, they pack their bank accounts in Switzerland and other places. One minister in Nigeria was indicted for $3 billion. How many jewelry can one woman wear? How many cars can you drive? How many of these boo-boo can you own? Eventually, if you have rats in your house, they won't even be interested in eating anything because they would have just out-eaten themselves. But people, the greed and the selfishness that we see in our world today leaves a lot to think about. So the picture I'm painting to you is a picture of gloom and doom. And so where are we headed? Did this woman come to receive this award to just tell us about everything we read and listen to on the radio and see on TV? The theme of this night is celebrating peace. And the question is, How do you celebrate peace in the midst of this? I thought about this very hard. And it's possible to celebrate peace in the midst of everything that I've said. You see, in 2003, Liberia, my country, was at a place where we had killed almost 10% of our population. 3 million people, 250,000 had died. Almost 10%. 500,000 internally displaced, 1 million, 500,000 refugees, 1 million internally displaced. Infrastructure destruction that still haunts us today. A group of us gathered together, women, first Christian women, through a dream that I had, woke up questioning myself. And I'm glad I'm in a house where people preach Jesus and teach Jesus, because sometimes it's very difficult, especially in the world today where everyone is trying to get religion out of the way to use their common sense. I don't know how possible that is. I had this dream, and someone was telling me, you need to bring the women of the church together to pray for peace. My boss was a pastor. So I went to work the next day and said to him, Reverend, I had this dream. I'm telling it to you so you can tell the women in the church to do that. He said, no, Lema, the dream bearer is always the dream carrier. I said, Reverend, do you understand what you're talking about? You know, I can sit right here and drink 24 bottles of beer, and I will still have a coherent conversation with you. You know, currently the man that I stay with is not my husband. And I went on and on and on. He said, my dear, I too can give you people in the Bible who were like you, but God still used them. Oh, Lord. So we started this thing. And then the Muslim women heard about it and said they needed to do the same thing. I had to bring them together, work with them, and we started this mass action for peace. Why I believe that in the midst of all of this, you can still find peace. These women came together. No one told their stories to the other. But as long as they heard, we want to work for peace, to change the tide in our country, Liberia, they all came. And we got to know one another. I live not far from where we used to protest on a daily basis. And I'll be the first, try to be the first every morning. So 6 a.m., I'm there. But there was this old lady who beat me at it. I would get there and she's there. I would try 5:30 and she's there. So one morning, but she would be sitting there, the white t-shirt that she wore was all torn. Her wrap had holes all in it, and she didn't even have flip-flops. So I sat next to her and she would be shivering. I asked her, why do you come here? And she said, to make peace. I asked her, what's your story? And then she turned to me and said, do you have sons? I said, yes, I have 2 boys. And she smiled and said, I had 2 boys. One died in the first war, and the second died a few months ago. I come here every morning to make sure you do not go through what I've been through. That is peace. When you put your needs, when you put your feelings, when you put your emotions, and you put all of the hurt and use what is in your willpower to change the tide, you may not benefit from it. Others may. But that is peace in the midst of storm. I went to DR Congo, and they brought 100 women in this room, and one after the other, These women told their stories of rape. They told their stories of abuse. And there was tears. And I was moving from one corner of the room, hugging this person and kissing that person and touching this person. But before going to Congo, the narrative in the international media was that Congo was the rape capital of the world. And I went in that room and listened to those women's stories. But one after the other, the story had a trend that the international media was not picking on. And what was the trend? I was raped. I wanted to die. And my sisters came. Afterwards, I gained hope. I was raped. I wanted to die. My sisters came. Each of those women in that room told stories of how women who had also been raped came and gave them hope. That is peace. When I left Congo, there was a huge media thing, and they asked me, what narrative of DR Congo are you taking to the rest of the world? For me, Congo is the capital of sisterhood. A place where, despite their pains, women reach out and touch each other. Many times as we journey, we hear and see things. I will tell you a story I've shared with people. I went to London, and I'm going to speak to 300 girls. I am exhausted again. I'm always exhausted. But then I get to places and the energy come. So I said I would write my speech on my flight, and I would sleep because there was a 2-hour or 1.5-hour drive from the Heathrow Airport to where I was going. And I got to the airport. My driver, I had seen his name in my itinerary. It sounded Arabic, Middle Eastern. I was happy. I said, Middle Eastern men don't talk to strange women, so I can sleep on my drive. And I get there, and this man is, hi, you want coffee? No, thank you. You want SIM card? Yes. We go, we grab the SIM card. We get in the car. He says, we're on our way. And I lay back, close my eyes. And then he said, excuse me, ma'am. Open my eyes. Say, I'm sorry, but I like to talk. I said, Jesus, you have a sense of humor. So being the person that I am, I said, okay, what do you want to talk about? And after his first few sentences, my notebook was out, my pen was in hand, and I started writing. He said, this morning, I should not have picked you up. The girls that I picked up last night were so excited talking about you. I went back to my office, switched places with someone because I wanted to be your driver. He said, you see, I'm Kurdish. I was born here, London. I've never been back home. I don't practice Islam. I was a normal kid living in this country, and then 9/11 happened. When the Twin Towers fell, my world failed. I am no longer that happy-go-lucky young Islamic kid anymore. I am a part of the statistics, the possible terrorists. I don't even pray. People don't see me. When they look at me, they look at what my faith, my ethnicity has become. Every time I hear about a suicide bomb, something in me dies. Every time something else happens, something in me dies. I am no longer me. In essence, he was crying out for his humanity. It had been stolen from him. Fast forward 2 weeks later, I'm on my way to New York to give a lecture, and I take my 18-month-old, who's 7 now, and she's learning to talk, and only 3 words, leave me alone. That was it. So we get to Washington Airport, and I gave her passport, gave my passport, and they took us to the little room. Anyone knows the little room? When you're traveling to the U.S., the security room? Oh, you're a good crowd. No one's been in that room. So we go in that room, and the room is cramped with close to 100-plus people, mothers holding their babies, but you could tell the people in the room because they were all profiled in a particular way, dressed like me, long beard, turban, covered in black, something, 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 you know, the usual, usual, usual. And these children, their mothers are trying to keep them quiet because they're so afraid, they don't want to upset. So I too decided to follow suit, forgetting that my 18 months old was born of me. And for 2 seconds, leave me alone, leave me alone, leave me alone. By the third time, I just like, she ran. And every homeland security person she saw, she gave a hug. She wrapped herself in the American flag, lie on the floor, roll from one place to the other. In 5 minutes, I heard Lema Bowie. I said, yes, welcome to America. Oh, wow, girlfriend, you got it done for me. Come on, let's go, baby girl. But as I walked out of that place and got on my flight to New York and reflected on what had happened and my experience with this Kurdish boy 2 weeks ago, my baby, like that Kurdish boy, was saying to those homeland security people, I'm a child. I've been on a 10-hour flight. I have the right to flex my leg. I have the right to a hug. I am a human. You've been in this room. You're tense. You probably want to go home to your own children. And I'm giving you a hug and I'm showing you love. I'm trying to tell you, I see your humanity. Do you see mine? And in the world that we live in today, whether Christian or Jewish or Muslim or whatever we claim, we go about this world without ever seeing the humanity of the other. When you see my sister, you see Kenyan and not a woman with the same needs that you have. When you see my sister there, you see a Hispanic, not a girl with the same needs that you have. Peace is rejecting every form of division that we see and hear, especially in this moment of political rhetorics. One of my favorite books of all times is The Politics of Jesus by Yoda. And as I prepare for this talk, I ask myself, who is the Jesus that we celebrate? He's the one who took care of prostitutes and rejects and everyone. And we call him the Prince of If indeed he is the Prince of Peace, he never backed down from injustice. He never backed down from corrupt officials. He never backed down from hypocritical politicians. He never backed down from people who were wolves in sheep clothing. He never backed back down from anything. He stood for the truth. He never joined what was trending. He created his own trend. In order for us as Christians in this community of Christ to celebrate peace, we must begin to emulate the Prince of Peace. Justice, mercy, love, kindness, moving above the rhetorics of our world. And it is only then, that we can stand and change the tide and the narrative of the world that we live in. But if we continue to sit down and practice the Christianity that is not really the Christianity that Christ preached, too scared to speak for justice, too afraid to challenge the political status quo, too concerned and self-absorbed, too worried about our own bank accounts and not worried about what's happening around us, we've missed the mark. But in order for us to truly stand up and say we celebrate peace, it is an everyday walk where peace kisses justice and justice meets mercy and mercy meets love. Thank you.
That concludes the talk given by 2011 Nobel Peace Laureate Lima Bowie on the occasion of her reception of the 2016 Community of Christ International Peace Award. KKFI thanks the Community of Christ for technical assistance with this recording. Afterwards, KKFI's Tom Crane and Mike Murphy joined others in the audience with Ms. Bowie. Here are excerpts from that post-speech gathering.
I'm wondering if you could comment on the role the media played both during the Civil War and the subsequent peace.
Well, there are, I would say, three kinds of media outlets: the local ones, the regional ones, and the international media. And I think given the state of the media, the global media, which informs the way local, regional media do their reporting, they focus on violence that have been overly sexualized and wars, and the objects or the instruments of war, instead of on the impact. And so a lot of the reporting that was done, I feel, really glorified the violence that was taking place in Liberia, and it's the same today in many places. Even in this country, when you have mass shooting, the press spends so much time doing analysis on the shooter, right, rather than talking about the grief of the families. And so others see it as, okay, this is a thing that can make me famous. I can go out there and do it. And it will spend ages. Imagine Columbine, after all of these years, they still do analysis after one mass shooting about the shooter. So this glorification of violence and the objects and instruments of violence is, I think, is really sad. And that was our situation. But when we started protesting, we were of the opinion that we will give the world a different narrative other than the ones that the media was putting out there. And the narrative was that there were women and children who were being impacted in ways that the world had not heard about. And we want our stories to go out. Some international media outlet told the makers of the documentary film, Pray the Devil Back to Hell, that of course they saw us, because they asked them why we never read about these women in the New York Times or saw them on it. And they said, oh, we saw them, but they were pathetic looking. You know,
that's what I read. Thought when I read the book was, how come I didn't know more about this?
Yeah, so they said we were pathetic looking, and so they did not want to spend a lot of their time and energy on talking about what we do. And this is not just a Liberian phenomenon. I mean, I spoke about Congo. You go to Congo and you see great work women are doing in the midst of the violence, but no one wants to talk about it. It's easier to grasp the attention of the world if you're talking about the evils that people are doing. And I think the media will help peace in our world if they begin to focus more on peaceful things rather than glorifying violence through the way they report.
Do you think that the Americo-Liberians are still in charge over there pretty much?
Yeah, but I also think that over time the Americo-Liberian class is shifting, and if we're not careful, even me, I'll one day be called an Americo-Liberian, because the way people now see Americo-Liberians is if you're educated and you're successful and you have it going for you. So there's a new breed of Americo-Liberians that are being created by society. Huh. Yes, and so that's it. But in terms of the political structure, you still have a few powerful people, but I won't say that hegemony that existed is still standing. Yeah. Any question from the young people yet? Yeah, don't be shy, ask me anything.
I was curious, we came in a little late. So I was wondering what your organization was. I didn't.
We have, from my bio they read, I've worked and started many organizations, but right now my focus is with my foundation. Mm-hmm. It's based in Liberia, and we do education and leadership development for young people. Okay. So we started 3 years ago, and we started with 7 girls. We granted them scholarship to go to local universities and high school. 3 years later, we have 74 girls, 3 boys in 7 countries around the world. And we've seen 8 graduate from college and high school. We are in the process of building the first technical high school for girls in Liberia. This Community of Christ gift is going to the construction of phase 1, part of the construction of the administrative complex. It's $300,000 to build.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, we raised close to $50,000, and this $50,000 will make $100,000, and then we got $50,000 donations, so we're halfway to our goal for constructing the administrative complex. Then we now have the opportunity to put our bid in for funding from parts of Europe. If we get that funding, we will be halfway through building the school. We want to give technical and entrepreneurship skills to girls so that when they finish high school, if they do not have the chance of going to college, they can already start a life and a business with the skills. So it's going to be a 4-year program, high school and technical skills. That's what I do. This summer, from January to August, I spent all of my time in Africa. I refused to come back to the U.S., even if Obama sent for me. No. Because I used that time to run youth camps around. This year, in 2 weeks, I'll be in Ghana doing Peace Jam. Peace Jam is a youth camp so this is the first Ghana Peace Jams, and 300 young people will be there. Then I leave that camp and go to Monrovia and go to Western Liberia and do a reproductive health camp for 30 girls in 2 days, 30 boys 1 day. Boys and girls come together 1 day, and then the last day, boys, girls, and parents together. That community has a high rate of teenage pregnancy, and we're taking the Planned Parenthood Association with some other community workers to help them understand that these are things that are part. My favorite part of the summer is when I run my own peace camp. It's called Peace Through Fair Play. This year I'm taking it to Central Liberia. We usually run it in the form of a sports camp. So all of our participants are divided up into teams. So we have four teams, the blue team, three teams, blue, green, and yellow team. And what we do is we mix children who are physically challenged with children who are normal. So we bring blind, deaf, and this year for the first time we're bringing disabled kids. So each team have one of each or two of each. And we have volunteers, and our work is to keep them safe, but to track the way they interact. So we give points. So for example, when it's dinner time, everyone sits together as a team, and the volunteers are watching to see how they're serving the blind kids. And when dinner is over, everyone has to gather in a spot for a prize. And we're also observing how those who are physically fit run, and we've had it. They will run and leave the blind kids, and then they'll be standing in a circle because they're so anxious to win the prize and yell at the blind kids, come, we're here, you know. But during that entire camp time, when we're spotting that one child who cuts across every team to help other children. We do that, then we also, last year, we introduced taking them to our parliament where they ask questions of our lawmakers. And we brought them to our Chief Justice last year. And he said he had only 40 minutes to talk to the young people. 2 hours later, he wanted to partner with us for the next year. So this year we're doing it, we're doing that work. And then we're doing a reading camp. This is the first time we're going to do the reading camp. And I'm doing things with all 74 of my students and bringing some female leaders to talk to them. Then I'm doing something called Moving Beyond the Classroom. So it's 3 months of hands-on community work, nothing like this. Because for me, that is what informs wherever I go to talk. So that's what I do on a less busy day.
Sure. Thank you for listening to The Forum with Liberian peace activist Lima Bowie. Special thanks to Kendra Friend and all those at the Community of Christ for making this broadcast possible. You are tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.